Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. And as always, you can head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out all the great podcasts and articles updated daily on the website. And please share those on social media. We have a big show tonight with Pastor and City Councilman Brian Hawkins, who's going to be running for California's 1st Congressional District against Radical Ruiz, who is one of Nancy Pelosi's puppets. This guy votes with Nancy Pelosi almost 100% of the time. Councilman Hawkins would be some great fresh blood, and we are happy to have him here today. But first off, how are you doing tonight, Rob?
You know, I'm doing well tonight. I'm glad that we're going to have Pastor Brian Hawkins on with us. Something that you said that is so true is that we need new blood. We need new blood in the party. We have too many old heads in the party. And when you look at California, a Democrat state, Democrat governor, representatives, Democrat, Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters. The last time I looked, Nancy and Maxine are both in their 80s. They're dinosaurs. It's time for them to move on. Dianne Feinstein, she's 86. Do these people even have a finger on the pulse of their constituents? Do they know what they want? Do they know what they need? It seems to me that the people that are in office now, they're just there to, you know, get some type of record. I was the oldest serving person here. I was the oldest person there. And I passed this and passed that, or you didn't pass it. And all the while, the people are not being served. And we've spoken about this to some of our other guests that have been on here. And it's true on both sides. You have it on the left and the right. Mitch McConnell, for example, I think it's time for him to go. He served his time. He's become stagnant. He's doing absolutely nothing. We need people that are willing to work for the people and not just go to the Hill and make money and become millionaires. I mean, maybe I'm in the wrong profession. A lot of these folks got there, you know, their salaries, their incomes were like next to zero, but somehow they manage to create wealth. Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, Dianne Feinstein, they've been there for almost like combined almost 100 years. And what are they doing? Well, I'll tell you one thing Nancy is doing, it's absolutely nothing. Maxine Waters, well, she's out preaching and pushing a race theory that the race boogeyman is out to get the Black people. That's all she says day in and day out. Well, there's one other thing. She's like, tear this up and tear that up, burn it down, confrontations. And like, come on, folks, we need to get together. We need to work for the people. So I'm glad we have someone like Pastor Brian Hawkins on New Blood. And one of the things that stood out when I was doing my research on him that I want to share with our listening audience is a video that he produced. And it stood out to me, a Black man and a Black conservative. Nothing against you, Andrew, but all men right now are being attacked. I'm being attacked because I'm a Black man and a Black conservative. Andrew, you're at the top of the apex list being attacked because you're a white man, white conservative. They're tired of us. They don't want us out there anymore. They want us just to shut up. But this statement or the words from Brian's video is just powerful. It goes like this: the most dangerous political figure in California. Let's address the elephant in the room. I am Black, a conservative. I back the blue. I protect the Second Amendment. Pro-life person. Rebuild, restore, renew America. Now, allow that to marinate in your thoughts. I'm a Black conservative. I back the blue. And right now in this day and age, we're not supposed to back the blue, especially a Black man. The Second Amendment? They want to take that, your right to own a gun. Nope, take it from them. And that was created for Blacks to have their guns because the Ku Klux Klan would come and attack Blacks. So the NRA was created and said, hey, we're going to give them guns because it's allowed under the Constitution. Democrats don't want that. Remember who doesn't want it? The Democrats. Pro-life person. Look at all the Black babies that are being killed through abortion. Shh, we want to say anything about that. And then to rebuild, restore, renew America. Remember when President Trump was on the scene? What did he say? Make America great again. Keep America great. What is Joe Biden doing? He's doing everything but that. He's tearing America down, along with his Democratic henchmen, dividing us along the lines of race. There's only one race, and that's the human race. We've got to get with it. So without further ado, I want to bring on Pastor Brian Hawkins to share his story and to tell us why he's running in California. Pastor Hawkins, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir, and thank you for having me on.
You know, Pastor, I got to say that the YouTube clip, the video that I saw, was so powerful. What made you decide to make it? What was the genesis of it?
So it wasn't only just a statement. When I jumped out the car, first of all, let me tell you this. It was a one take video. It's on the street in my community. When I initially said the statement, I knew that it was more than just a statement for me. People have been saying, man, that's a really serious statement. We launched it on TikTok. We created a TikTok account. I put the video up. It got over 1 million views. So many people resonated with it. And what a lot of people didn't really know was that it wasn't just a statement that I was saying, but I actually lived it. That statement is who I am. And it's the reason why I'm running for office. I am the most dangerous political figure, and it has a lot to do with my past.
A lot to do with your past. So tell us just a little bit about your past, because like I said, it resonated with me. The words were so powerful. And then hearing your voice, hearing it come from you, I mean, that was it. So share with our listeners just about your past when you say it resonates with you.
Absolutely. So I'm currently an elected official. I'm the councilman in the city of San Jacinto. I'm also senior pastor of a church that I founded here. A lot of people in the community know me as the 24/7 pastor, 365. I have people who call me, you know, 3-4 o'clock in the morning because I told myself I would be available. And I sound just as excited to serve at 3-4 o'clock as I would at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. I've been in management, you know, great jobs the last, you know, 10-12 years of my life. And so what make me the most dangerous political figure is the fact that outside of all of those things, you know, I spent 10 years incarcerated. You know, I spent 6.5 years. I spent 6 years in prison for having a rental car that was 3 days late. And that's where, you know, when I talk about the 94 crime bill that Joe Biden signed, that a lot of individuals stay away from is a result of that. And so I have a criminal record. I have a criminal background. You know, I grew up, you know, in the inner cities of Southeast San Diego and East Oakland and some parts of North Carolina. And so I've seen a lot, I've overcome a lot, and I choose to be a voice of righteousness towards the Democratic Party. I like to call myself not only just the most dangerous political figure, but really the Democrats' kryptonite.
I like that, the Democrats' kryptonite. So let me just get a couple of things straight here. You went to prison. You didn't kill anybody. You didn't beat up anybody. But because of a car rental? Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, sir. So a lot of people are familiar with the double jeopardy statement, or if you're not, you can go watch the movie with Tommy Lee Jones about double jeopardy. It means be charged for the same crime twice. Well, that's exactly what the 94 crime bill does. It literally is a legal document that gives you double the amount of time for a previous crime that you've already been sentenced for. So when I talk about that rental car, if I go back to when I was 18 years old, I was over at a friend's house and his father, my friend's father gun came up missing. I was in, you know, jail for about 5 months because we were all charged with burglary. I signed a deal to say I didn't want to contest it. I knew I was innocent. So they said, don't contest it. I didn't contest it. I got a strike. Well, with that strike, you know, this was in 1996, 2 years after, you know, that bill and then the three strike law. And so from there, anything that you get double the time, which ultimately you're getting time for your previous crime. So, you know, fast forward a year later, I'm driving one of the cars on the street that I lived in because there's a lot of gangs, a lot of drugs. You know, most of the cars were stolen on that street. I'm at work. I get arrested for having the stolen car. I didn't steal the car. It was just what they call joyriding, or driving the car without the owner's consent. And that was the first time I got a double sentence. I was sentenced to 16 months, but because of the bill, it went to 32 months. And then fast forward, the rental car, which wasn't a stolen car. It wasn't criminal activity. It was just negligence on our part. We didn't extend the agreement for 3 days. It was a car rented in Vegas. We drove to California, got into a car accident. Realistically, I wasn't supposed to drive. So that was probably the first thing. I wasn't on the rental as the driver. The person who rented a car came to court, said that, you know, she forgot to extend the agreement. We didn't extend it. The case went through. It should have got dismissed. That should have been the lawful thing for the district attorney to do, was dismiss it. I don't like to call myself a victim because I'm not. But yeah, in the closing arguments, the DA brought in, you know, aiding and abetting, because the person on the witness stand admitted that we forgot to extend the agreement, and which most people on the jury don't understand courtroom language. And I was found guilty and sentenced to 6 years in prison. The sentence was 3 years, but because of the laws, it was doubled, and I was given 6 years in prison.
And this is all is a direct result of Joe Biden's 1994 crime bill, which to this day he refuses to acknowledge. To this day, he says, oh, no, not me. A bill that Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, all supported. And then when you look at California itself, where Kamala Harris was the attorney general, she withheld exculpatory information to keep Black men out of jail or to reduce their sentences. But yet and still, you have Joe Biden, an old white man, whom the Democrats said, we don't need an old white man telling us what to do, have him at the top of the ticket, and then she calls herself Black today, woman behind him as a VP. But they're telling us that the race boogeyman is going to get us. When you are affected directly because of a bill that he supported, and I guess she was upholding during her time in office in California, and I would be bitter. I would be angry. I would be mad. Are you bitter? Are you angry? Are you mad?
No, I don't have time to be bitter. I don't have time to be angry. I want to focus my life on being a voice to a narrative that it's time to destroy. You know, I've said this before, and I really believe that the one war that it's finally time for us to pull our troops out is the race war. It's been going on too long. There's so many individuals that seem like they want to continue to keep it going on. The race card, out of all the credit cards that are out there, it's the only card that doesn't have an expiration date. And it seemed like in 2020, not only did they not put an expiration date to it, but they literally extended the limit on it. Like it's sad that how individuals are being manipulated with this system that is put in place. Like they talk about systemic racism, but there's so many things now that they're doing. They're creating the narrative of systemic racism right before our eyes, even though they know it don't exist.
Pastor Hawkins, you mentioned how you were incarcerated for returning a rental car 3 days late. We talked about how a lot of people would feel like a victim, but here you are, you're a councilman, you're a pastor, and you're running for Congress in California's first congressional district. How did your time incarcerated shape your faith?
So one, I want to, because I don't know what happened, just real quick. I'm not running for the first congressional district. It's the 36th. I think somewhere where paperwork was filed wrong. We did an amendment, so it should get changed on there. So I know it's still showing up in some places as the first congressional district, but it's the 36th where Raul Ruiz sits. So in prison is unique. And I'll tell this to anybody, there's no rehabilitation in prison. Even though California during Arnold Schwarzenegger's time as governor changed from CDC to CDCR, the rehabilitation really came from myself. Like I realized that I didn't want to become a statistic. I didn't want to end up becoming a life or a life on what we call installment plans. Like I'll get out and go back, get out and go back. And the rest of my life is really spent between streets and prison. You know, I started a program while I was in prison. I mean, there's a lot of programs in there that are really only getting funding for having individuals take the program, but not really help people better themselves. You know, prison is really a street. It's a community itself. You know, the warden would be like the mayor or the governor. You have deputy wardens, the chief deputy wardens. And you have a school system. You know, there's guys in prison that literally don't know their ABCs. You know, there's guys in prison that don't know, you know, words. I mean, it's a sad place for a lot of broken men. And one of the things I started to do, if you go onto YouTube, there's a video on there called From Prison to Promise. There's little clips of me speaking in front of rooms of hundreds of inmates where I literally started a program myself in prison called Freedom of Choice and start to educate and encourage inmates while I was an inmate myself. You know, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I would get 300 men to come from their dorm into the chow hall because the program got so big and start encouraging them and educating them. Every Thursday and Friday, I would get a book. I would order a book from USA Today or the Wall Street Journal. For some reason, God just put it on my heart to, you know, experience this and be a voice that really, it gives me an authentic move today. And it's the reason why I call myself the most dangerous political figure and also the Democrats' kryptonite. I felt like it was important for me. It's kind of like the Joseph experience. When Joseph spent those years in prison, you know, he was able to, you know, take that moment, that knowledge, and be of a help to his brothers when God exalted him to the second highest position in the land. So you're literally seeing Joseph's story being acted out in 2021.
That's powerful. Not having any, no bitterness, not being the victim, but saying, hey, I can rise above this. I'm going to move forward. Now, something else you had shared with us before we went on the air, is that something that we hear all the time from Black men, that they're pulled over for being Black. And you said that, no, you weren't pulled over for being Black. You were pulled over for breaking the law. What do you have to say to those Black men who always fall into that narrative by the media that they were pulled over because they were Black? I mean, just the other day, or not too long ago, we have this kid, man, not a kid, Devontae Wright, who was pulled over, was being arrested. He chose to fight. Okay. What happened to him is unfortunate. Okay, the police pulled out a gun as opposed to the taser, lost his life. George Floyd, they were trying to arrest him. What happened to George Floyd should not have happened. The cop shouldn't have had his knee on his neck. To me, it was excessive force. But to say that these cops killed these men because they were Black, my opinion is wrong. What do you say, Pastor?
So let me give you, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, let me give you a story that happened about 3 years ago. I was going through some financial hard times. Like I said, I'm a pastor of a church. I chose to keep my church doors open as opposed to living in my apartment. Our church is in a low income area. So for about 2 years, I was living in the church. You know, even when I was running for office, you know, a few people even knew that, you know, I was living in church, that I was giving my kids, a bath in the little kiddie pool. And so, you know, there was so much that I was enduring. Almost 2 years ago, I was driving down the streets in Florida Avenue in Hemet. And I remember I couldn't extend my agreement on my car because I had a catalytic converter issue. So I couldn't get my renewal on my registration. I had issue with my license. Like I was just in a financial bind. So my license was suspended. I had no insurance on the car. The tags on the car was expired. You know, I'm in a, you know, Q56 2004 Infiniti truck. It looks nice. People don't know the different years, so it looks nice. I'm on Florida Avenue, one of the, you know, in the city of Hemet, it's a high area for prostitution, criminal activities, gangs. And the police officer pulled me over. And he pulled up to me and said, you know why I pulled you over? I said, yep, I got expired tags. And he was like, and I began to tell him, I said, look, I'm going through financial hardship. I explained to him, you know, very respectful. And the officer said, you know, I'm not going to make this day worse for you because you already got enough bills tied up. Look, let me just give you a fix-it ticket. You get this signed off. You probably pay like a few dollars and go on about your way. He should have impounded the car. He should have towed the car. He had every right to tow that car. You know, everything. And I even went and posted it on my Facebook page. I said, man, I can't believe I got racially profiled, you know, driving a nice car while being Black on Florida Avenue, you know, and I'm going through the sob store. I said, you know, hey, so what? My tabs expired. So what? My license was suspended. So what? That I didn't have insurance. He didn't have a right to pull me over. People just laughed at it. And that's what it is. You know, this whole victim mentality. One of the things we have to start being is honest, brutally honest. You know, I see people who create this hero status for Black criminals, but they destroy Black conservatives. Like, it's like you rather support someone who's breaking the law for the sake of this narrative of injustice. But the attacks that goes towards Black conservative, I think, is just unique and it's interesting. You know, we have to start having ownership. The only way we're going to solve these issues is we have to be honest. You know, a lot of these police shootings, I think somebody did a story about it a few months ago. Out of the hundreds of, you know, Black men who were supposedly killed unarmed, only 10 of them were innocent. And it doesn't justify any. But when I was out in the streets, you know, and I was hanging around criminal element, you know, when I was around criminal, you know, environments, you know, there was this things that come along with it. In that dark place, when it's dark at night and you hanging out, you know, there's an attraction to it. And we have to be honest. It's not like individuals are out just living, you know, Michael Brown, you know, this guy pushed a guy and was robbing a store, but we're not telling the full story of it. We're telling when the camera comes on. And we got to stop falling for the narrative of when the camera comes on. You know, my father has never had a speeding ticket. My father has never known what handcuffs feel like. My father has never been to jail. You know, he gets up, go to work, 5 a.m. in the morning. By the time he gets off and get home, you know, that's all I saw in my dad. Like, so I didn't even come from that stereotypical background home. Both my parents educated, both my parents in home. I got in trouble on my own. So the narrative of that, and it's time that we share the true stories and be brutally honest. You know, people talk about prison reform, but it's time for community reform. It has to happen on both sides. And we have to collectively fix this together, not just point the camera on and say, fix the police, fix the prison system. You know, like, why are we worried about mass incarceration when we're not talking about mass breaking the law?
Well, Pastor, you've said so many things there. That's just, it's powerful. You know, pulled over for not being Black, but pulled over for breaking the law. And then the narratives that the left wants to put out there that they're attacking Black men, they're coming after Black men, as opposed to understanding what's happening in our own communities. We need to fix that problem. We need to address the problem of our communities. Why is it that we're afraid or don't want to do it? I mean, Barack Obama, at one point, he came out and he was talking about it, but now he's quiet. He says absolutely nothing. He's quiet when they're out there attacking Tim Scott, a Black man, a successful Black man who came from poverty, and now he's on the Hill as a Black senator. But it's like, don't look at him, look somewhere else. We want to show you the victimization, the people who are being victimized. Why are Black people so afraid to address it? This is something, in my opinion, that Black people have got to fix for themselves and stop waiting for the white man to come and fix it. What are we waiting for, Pastor?
I think there's this story that's being taught that this is how you do it. You know, I remember there's this family that goes to my church. And I remember one day, the young man, he was standing in front of the grocery store with a box of chocolate. He's like 23, 24 years old. He has 3 children. And I asked him, I said, hey, you know, you ever thought about going to college or anything? He said, you know, you're standing out here for, you know, 7-8 hours. And he was raising money to pay for his hotel room. You know, his hotel room was about $60. And so, you know, he would get a box of chocolates, sell them for $2 each. And so that's where he got his hotel room money at. So he would go out there and do this every day. And I asked him, I said, man, you know, I said, who taught you this? And he said, well, this is what my mom used to do when I was younger. You know, my mom used to go and sit out in front of this grocery store. So he created this method of this is how I'm supposed to do it. And, you know, you look at the Reverend Al Sharpton, you look at the, you know, you look at, you know, Jesse Jackson, you know, you look at Attorney Ben Crump. Attorney Ben Crump to me is like the attorney that fought for O.J. Simpson.
Johnny Cochran.
Yeah, Johnny Cochran. Yeah, he's a 2021 Johnny Cochran. He just shows up, you know, with, you know, high profile, you know, race crimes and different things of that nature. And because Al Sharpton created this, you know, strategy and this blueprint, this, you know, hey, as long as you create this victim mentality, you know, we can really make a lot of money off, you know, oppression. We can make a lot of money off of, you know, keeping Black people down. And it's kind of like with Black Lives Matter. And they've taken it to a whole nother level of really raising money off the, you know, the backs of a lot of Blacks oppression. But this is the playbook that's being taught. You know, the Democratic Party has learned this playbook, you know, goes back to LBJ's, you know, war on poverty, or I like to call it the war on family, you know, keeping people oppressed. But at the same time, it's saying, hey, I'm out here fighting for you. There's the Maslow effect. I'm having you salivate and playing with the bells. It's a strategy. It's a psychological strategy that have you believing that I'm helping you. And here's the statement, and I'm going to tell you right now, so you guys are going to hear this first. This is the reason why it's worked time after time after time. There's a quote, and I don't know if it's just in the Black community, it could be in all communities, but I want you to hear this quote, and this is the reason why individuals are stuck right where they're at. Do you remember, are you familiar with the quote, do not bite off the hand that feeds you?
Absolutely. I think we've all heard that.
That's quote. That's the reason why we're in this situation.
And you are tuned into After Dark with Robin Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all of the great shows over at America Out Loud. We will be back with more on Pastor Brian Hawkins to talk California politics, his run for Congress, and a lot more.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together. And we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
And we're back. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Pastor Brian Hawkins. And as he said, he's running for the 36th district in California, congressional district in California. We have the first, but that was wrong. So the first segment was powerful. Learned a lot about Pastor Hawkins, his life, what he's gone through. One of the things that really stands out is Joe Biden's 1994 crime bill that impacted his life. Didn't make him a victim, it made him a survivor. And I would encourage all of you out here to go to DuckDuckGo and study that bill and find out what it's all about. And you'll see that a lot of the stuff that the Democrats are talking about that's affecting Black people, it's their repressive policies, not the policies of the right. Look around you, look at all the towns and cities where we're having all this upheaval. It's blue states, cities, and towns because of the policies that they've created. And now they want to blame it on the right. No, and we're not going to let them get away with it because we're going to push back. And we're going to have people going to the Hill like Pastor Brian Hawkins, who's going to stand up and he's going to speak out. And he's going to say, no, I was there. It impacted my life, but I am a survivor. And this is how you too can be a survivor. Stop allowing them to make you a victim so that they could keep you down. So going back to Pastor Hawkins, what do you hope to change in your district? Why are you running in your district other than the fact that you've lived this life and you can help other Black men, white men, Mexican men, men of all races and women to get on the right track? What do you hope to accomplish in your district, sir?
Thank you. So I lived a couple of years in North Carolina, and one of the things you'll learn when you visit North Carolina, and there's a beautiful license plate where it says first in flight. And it takes me back to the Wright brothers when they were trying to, you know, do what birds do. You can just imagine the ridicule. You can just imagine the curiosity. You can just imagine people laughing at them. And, you know, if there was one person in history, I mean, there's like a lot of people in history I would love to see, you know, today. But the Wright brothers, I would love to see their expression on seeing a 747 fly across the air. You know, I mean, the effort that they put into it, you know, I saw their airplane. We have a museum in Paris, California, where they actually have a replica of that airplane. And it's just such a beautiful, you know, piece of art. And I bring that up is because I feel like during that time, you can argue that it's impossible to fly. You can argue that, you know, flying would never happen. And when I look at where we're at right now, when I hear the narrative of all that, what is being shared, you know, what's impossible, you know, systemic racism, systematic oppression, all these different narratives, you know, when you hear that Black people are oppressed, or they don't have IDs, or they don't have cell phones, or they're not smart enough to use computers, and, you know, white people is just, poor people is just as smart as white people. You know, when you hear these narratives in this language, it's time for a Wright brother. You know, it's time for someone to step up and really be the voice of, you know, what's possible, you know, and that's what we need today. That's what we need. We need not the Wright brother, but the right brother, right? You know, to be
the
able
right
to say,
person,
you know what,
right?
You know, you get the right person that can say, it's time to put that first in flight against racism. It's time to put that first in flight against, you know, systemic racism and oppression and all these different narratives that individuals are saying that can't happen. You know, people are tired of division. Last night, during my campaign launch party, I introduced a championship belt. And on this belt, it had unity on it. You know, I literally took a boxing belt and went and put unity on the front and our district in it. And I said, you know, I'm fighting for unity. I'm fighting for the voice of this country coming together. There are so many people that's divided right now that are tired of the media and the news that is putting on, you know, white people hating Black people hating whites, and officers going around and shooting people. You know, it's time to destroy these narratives. And until we actually have a first in flight, the people can always continue to use this. But someone like my story can really say, hey, you know, how was this guy able to do it? Well, then why are we still talking about it's impossible? If this guy had all these things stacked against him, every argument that you're making, he destroyed it. You could say, oh yeah, he he's an anomaly, whatever. But then why not use that and build on it instead of using it as an excuse? Because that's something I hear too. You know, you're just one story. Okay, well, take this one story and let's see if we can get two stories.
I like this. Let's see if we can take it and to build on it as opposed to saying he's an anomaly. Let's go back to the victimization. Build on the successes of what you're saying and move forward. So when you look at the candidate that you're going against, Raul Ruiz, I mean, I don't know what he has done for your district or hasn't done, But what sets you aside from his policies and the way he's, what he's doing?
Well, one of the things is that he's just become, you know, more so just a political puppet. You know, there's few politicians that you can say, matter of fact, it's probably, I mean, in the last 20 years, how many politicians can you honestly name and say, you know, I know this person was not controlled by DC. I know this person had their own voice. I know this person, like when you hear someone speak in politics, do you hear people speaking for the community, the people, or do you hear them speaking for the party? You know, and that's the big difference. You know, if you hear party conversation, you don't hear people conversation. And that's the thing that sets me apart. Like I spend time with people. I spend time in the community. You know, I spend time listening to people. You know, one of the things I've heard, you know, in the district is, you know, I've sent emails after emails after emails and never get a response back. You know, never hear back. And I'm like, how can, I mean, it's called the House of Representatives. You know, it sounds fancy, but at the end of the day, it's a house built to represent the people. That's really the simple definition of it. And my thing is, how can someone say they represent you if you never came and talked to me? You know, how can you represent me and you don't know what I'm going through? How can you represent me when you've never walked into my business, when you've never, you know, visited my school? You know, as an elected official, I know it's possible to go and meet people in your community. Right now, I'm running a campaign throughout my district as an elected official. And you know what's one of the things people say here in my city? We see you everywhere in town. Even though I'm all over the 36th Congressional District, the citizens in the city of San Jacinto still feel like I represent them locally. I go and shop locally. I do all my business locally. All my banners and flags and flyers is all done locally. You know, I go to dinner locally. You know, everything I do is to bring attention to the business that I'm the councilman here. And there's five other people that sits on council. And I'm the, if you take a poll right now and you say, who is the most visibly known councilman in the city of San Jacinto? I guarantee you overwhelmingly, you're going to get my name. You're going to get passed.
You have your thumb on the pulse of the community. You're listening, you're watching, and you're understanding, unlike, as you said, some of the puppets who are there voting for the party head, as Andrew mentioned, and not listening to the people. You're there with the people. You're not like some of the other folks who go to other towns and create drama, threatening violence. You're there listening to your constituents because you care. You're setting the example.
Yeah, and California is such a beautiful state. Everyone has seen the beaches, but sadly nowadays when people see recent photos of California, they see the homeless crisis, the drug usage on the streets. How is your vision for California different than what the Democrats have done over the past couple of decades, Pastor Hawkins?
Well, you know, it's easy to tell people what my vision is. I encourage people to come walk through my city. Come look at the, you know, as a matter of fact, NBC News just came and did a report just 3 days ago on the city of San Jacinto. In our newspaper, Inland Valley Empire, Inland Valley, I can't think of the name of it, but it's a magazine out here that said San Jacinto, because of its newly elected council, it's definitely a city to watch. I mean, I'm talking about in just a short period of time. I mean, my first 100 days, if I walked you through our first 100 days, we went out and cleaned up a homeless community. There's an encampment down here, about 50 homeless people. We got every one of those homeless people off the streets and into some type of wraparound situation. Now, has it invited more in? Yes, but I guarantee you our homeless visibility has shrunk significantly. We went out and cleaned out a lot of the areas where they just hoarded, you know, I think the report said 50 tons of trash that was picked up over a weekend, inspired a community to come out. We started doing what I call my Captain Planet initiative, the cartoon from when I was a kid with, you know, the guy Captain Planet would get five planetarians and they would go and, you know, clean up and, you know, the world of pollutions. And when the task was too big, they would come together and form Captain Planet. And so I made a flyer, said, you know, who remembers Captain Planet? And so start inspiring the community. We went out and started doing graffiti removal. You know, there's a park right across the street from my home now called Mistletoe Park, riddled with homeless and drug deals. Now, if you come over there, you see kids. Before I ran, if you go and look at Nextdoor app or some of the other people, type up Mistletoe Park, you will see a lot of the negative stuff. I wouldn't dare take my kids there. I got videos of kids. There's a family that sent me a text message just the other day. They were visiting from Los Angeles. And he said, you know, I want to thank you for taking your time out to come and meet us at the park. I didn't even know who they were. They said, we were going through some things. And, you know, I saw their kids playing at the park and I wanted to go over there and just tell them, thank you for bringing your kids to the park. But many kids are starting to come to the park. And so it takes leadership. One of the things that I would do is go into every city, especially in the inner city, and I would find those hidden leaders. There's some hidden jewels, some gems that are in the community that are not getting the recognition, that are not getting that big financial help, but are really making the big difference, that should be the ones getting that, you know, $100 million Warner Brother deal, that they should be getting that, you know, that BLM movement type money, because they're the ones that's really there, that's not creating this victim mentality, but because they're not getting the money, they're struggling, they're trying to put everything together. And I would get those leaders and help raise those up. I'm looking for the hidden gems, not the ones that are on TV doing the, you know, the Al Sharpton speech and the Jesse Jackson speech, but the ones who are really, you know, doing those day-to-day programs that are in those closed down old Boys and Girls Club gyms and those old boxing gyms, and meet those individuals. We have a group out here called Boxing for Christ with a lady named Sonia Ramos. She has about 300-400 kids, inner city kids that come out, you know, and the city got together and let her use a building. But she's a hidden gem in our community. You know, she's working with at-risk youth every day. Jeff Penn, you know, Cops for Kids, working with at-risk youth every day. There's programs all throughout California that's just not being recognized. And it's time for them to get the help. And those are the ones that's going to really help turn this thing around. Not the ones that are race baiting, but the ones that are really trying to teach these young kids how to tie ties and how to wear a dress and how to sit with etiquette and how to own your power and how to develop these young kids to be inspiring adults.
Pastor Hawkins, just in the time that we've had with you, we can tell that you're just a strong candidate that the Republican Party should be putting its weight behind. Have you heard anything from Ronna McDaniel or the GOP yet saying that they want to help you, maybe send you a team to go knock on doors, help you out or anything, or have they been silent so far?
So here's the beautiful thing about it. When I made my statement that said I was going to run for Congress, exactly what my statement, it was something that God had, you know, shared with me the night that I had won council. And he said, get ready for Congress. My God, I'm trying to enjoy this victory. You know, like, well, he like, you know, don't enjoy a victory that belonged to me. This belongs to, you know, I mean, don't enjoy a victory that it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to me. I'm like, okay, God. So when I made that video that a lot of people have seen, the most dangerous political figure, I got a phone call from a gentleman by the name of Sam Spencer. He's the regional director from the Republican National Congressional Committee. And, you know, some folks in Washington, D.C. had saw the video. Kevin McCarthy had reached out and said, you know, hey, find out about this candidate. Jessica Patterson, our chairman of the GOP in California, you know, sent some people my way and wanted to make sure that I wasn't wasting money because I'm a new candidate. You know, there's a lot of consulting firms that, you know, look for candidates like myself and try to raise a lot of money. And then when it's time to run, you don't have anything left. And so they saw my video and was like, man, you know, find out how much money he spent, make sure he's not in a contract with some video production company. And so they reached out and they called me and sent a consultant firm to help me out and navigate me. And they said, well, how much money did you spend on the video? I said, well, how much money do you think I spent? They're like, well, you know, we've seen some videos from other, you know, individuals out there that have done some videos similar to it, Kim Klasick and Joe Collins. They spent about $30,000, $40,000 on their video. And so we were saying you probably spent about $20,000, $25,000 on the video. I said, well, that's good to know. That's really good to know because I didn't spend a dime. I actually filmed the video with an iPhone Pro, 12 Pro. You know, we edited it up on a desktop computer with free software. It was just me and another friend of mine's, Pastor Blake Booth. And we just, you know, did the video and they were blown away. they were literally blown away. But the fact is that I didn't spend a dime on the video. We've made a lot of money from the video. And I said, that just speaks to my, you know, my principles of something my brother told me when I was younger. You know, you always have more time than money. And learn how to figure things out so you can save money. And that's one of the things that I do. I learned to figure things out. And so, yeah, I've been getting a lot of support. You know, Jessica Patterson from the California GOP, you know, she's tweeted pictures of me. And, you know, I've spoken at a lot of different events. Don Dix, the chairman of the Riverside GOP, was actually an MC at my launch event that I had. A lot of the central committees and, you know, here locally, you know, I have so much support in the GOP party. And one of the things they're trying to do is make sure that no other Republican candidate enter into the ring so we can save money past the primaries. But yeah, I definitely have some national attention. I'm actually going to be flying out to North Carolina in the near future to go meet with some of the congressmen in North Carolina, Lieutenant Mark Robson. They're trying to get me a meeting set up with Senator Tim Scott and Senator Lindsey Graham. I was also, you know, looking to do a plan to go down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with, you know, President Donald Trump. And so there's a lot of things that's moving on in. But at the end of the day, I really don't want anybody to get the credit for this campaign but God. You know, I want to make sure that all the glory goes back to God. And so when I ran my seat on Congress or council, I didn't have one endorsement. I didn't seek anyone's endorsement. I wanted to make sure that God get the glory. This is my Gideon campaign. You know, I want to make sure that in the end, people know, like I said on TV, you know, we need to circle back to God. And I want to make sure that God get the glory in this campaign. This testimony belongs to him.
Well, it's a very powerful testimony. Everything that you've said to us tonight, and I appreciate you coming on, because there's just so many things that you could check off your box with what we're hearing on the left. And your story, a story of survival, a story of, I've been there, I can tell you the story. And that narrative that you hear, that's just not it. I have my thumb on the pulse of my community. I see what needs to be done. I'm not just here just to go to the hill and just be a puppet or a straw man. I'm willing to work for the people. I want to make a change. I want to make a difference. And I'm glad to hear that the GOP, that they're reaching out, because if they weren't, I wouldn't let them have it, because there are too many times that we have candidates that are out there that they're not supporting. They're supporting those individuals that they think, oh, well, they got the money so they can do it themselves. But do they have the message? You have the message. You have a message of survival. You have a message that you are a Black man who was going down the wrong path, who encountered Joe Biden's crazy 1994 crimes bill, and you survived. There are so many other Blacks that are out there that probably want, or not want, but are probably conservative also, but are afraid to say it, afraid to come out. And as you said, your family, the back end of your family, I mean, mom and dad both in the house, but you chose to go a different direction. But there is always redemption, and you found your redemption. And now you're walking within your call. So what is your message to Black men that are straddling the fence of, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I do agree with the premises of the conservatives or the Republicans, I did get a job, Donald Trump was good for us, but they're telling me I shouldn't like him. What is your message? Because it is a battle out there for a lot of young Black people, especially Black men, because they want to be in the in crowd as opposed to being true to their conviction and saying, no, this is who I am, I'm going to stand on it. What is your message, Councilman?
Well, all I can do is say, you know, look at what I've done. You know, look at what's capable. You know, we can continue to let someone tell us their story, or we can really start to write our own story. That if we allow people to define what we can do, you will always be the definition of what you can't do. And that's one of the reasons why that I'm praying that not only my story inspires hope, but it really breaks down a lot of the barriers. It really breaks down a lot of the mental strongholds that have been rooted. You know, it reminds me of the story in the Bible where, you know, the children of Israel, you know, came back with a story and said, you know, that we look like grasshoppers in our own mind to the giants. The giants never saw them, but they conditioned their minds to believe that they were small, that they couldn't defeat the giants. And it's something about people giving you the narrative of what they think you can or can't do. And as long as you believe what someone else has set before you, you will always fall victim to what's possible. And I just hope that, you know, this victory will do what I believe that President Obama should have did in 2008. In 2009 when he was sworn in, I think he missed a great opportunity to destroy that narrative. And that just goes to show you how much of a narrative it is and how much individuals pay into keeping it going. You know, I don't know who wrote his speech, but it didn't have the words of unity. It didn't really have the words that would inspire people to push past it. You know, I was like so many individuals, you know, sitting back, and I remember in 2008, my last year was in prison. And I remember telling myself, like, man, there's no excuse. And I said, you know, I really want to get in politics, but I believe that because of my background, it wouldn't be possible. Even though I didn't say it, I just looked at my current conditions and just said, man, you know, so I just lived my victory through his victory, you know, a Black man being the president of the United States. And now here I am in 2021, you know, 12 years later, saying to myself, or 13 years later, saying to myself, like, wow, you know, things are possible. And I have a strong plan. 2022 victory on Congress. You know, I do believe in term limit. 2024, I want to be a speaker at the Republican National Convention. In 2028, I'm going to run for that seat at the White House. And then let's find out how much this, you know, whose race is on what side. You know, for the Republican to get behind an ex-felon and to win the nomination, you know, in 2028, you know, it really puts a lot of a spotlight on which party is the party of racism, what party is the party of prison reform, what party is the party of really injustice.
Yeah, big plans ahead for Councilman Hawkins. I want to get your opinions on a couple issues that Joe Biden has spoken about recently. Your state of California has already got really high taxes, and Joe Biden wants to raise them even more, taking up to 50% of the wealth from people making $400,000 or more. If you were elected to Congress, would you vote to raise taxes, or did you think President Trump was going in the right direction with his tax cuts?
Yeah, I believe he was going in the right direction. I mean, there's a lot of wasteful spending and a lot of these bills. And it's time for us to really dig through and go through, you know, the taxes that are being presented. You know, instead of just saying we're going to pass this $1.9 trillion, instead of saying we're going to, it's time for a full transparency. Why not have a detailed discussion to the American people so they can hear exactly what this $100 billion is going towards, what this $400 billion is going towards, and a transparency on what happened when we gave the last $109 trillion, how much money went to that. It's time for a level of transparency so people can understand when individuals hear that it's time to cut the fat, it's time to cut the pork. Let's really go through this and make sure that people understand that, you know, how much of this is wasteful spending, because there's a lot of wasteful spending, a ton of it. And people just don't understand it because they focus on what was the quote? You know, when I get elected, everybody's going to get $2,000. So people automatically assume that the $1.9 trillion was $2,000 to everybody. And it wasn't. And that was a fraction of the bill. And people just didn't understand it. They didn't really get it. And they just thought, oh, well, all you Republicans, send your money back. And so, yeah, it's easy to cut taxes. It's the same way in your house. You know, I used to manage gyms. You know, I used to be a manager of, you know, one of the big franchise gyms out here in the country, period. And we used to have the same, you know, when it's time for people to, you know, cut some of their bills, the gym membership is one of the first to go. You know, those, you know, Netflix and all those extra bills are the first to go. So it's time for us to do exactly what every household do when they, you know, lose a job or a payment. They start to look and say, you know what? Well, guess what? I guess I can't get my nails done anymore. I guess I can't, you know, go out to eat, you know, Starbucks. I got to start cutting and get down to just surviving. And that's what happened in 2020. A lot of people cut. Well, I can say a lot of people because people got a lot of free money. But yeah, I definitely believe that what Trump was doing was the right direction. There's a lot of wasteful spending. that we can cut off and then really put money to where it's really needed.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Pastor Hawkins, for joining us tonight. If people want to support your campaign, where can they go to support you?
Thank you. And I appreciate this opportunity for coming on here. My platform across social media is Real Pastor Brian. So TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's Real Pastor Brian, B-R-I-A-N, B-R-I-A-N. You can also go to my website, renewingamerica2022.com. Or HawkinsForCongress2022.com. They both go to the same link. But renewingamerica2022.com. You can go on there. You can check out the video. There's other videos on there, even my YouTube page. But I'm available. You can send me messages. I'm the one that respond to them. Everybody that's donated to my campaign, the thousands that have donated to my campaign, I've called every one of them back. Every person, every time I get a donation link, I'll call that person back. I call them right away just to say thank you. And I'm making hundreds of calls sometimes a day just to tell people I appreciate it. It can be $5. It can be $1, 50 cents. You know, I'm calling to let you know, thank you for dropping in the help to this battle.
Thank you, Pastor Hawkins. And thank you for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at AmericaOutloud.com, who just celebrated its 5th anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. We will see you guys next time. And remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.